The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Wright, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Wright, a very good morning. Boker Tov, how are you doing?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. Good, thank you. It sounds like a wacky and wild Wednesday with the 2 hours going wild.
Yeah, well, we're trying not to, but you know how things go. We do try and keep it together, but not always so successfully. All right, Anthony, what is happening with the counting of the votes following the Likud primary? Any surprises so far?
So, no real surprises, but some interesting results, I would say. I mean, at the moment, the latest that I've heard was after only 20% of the vote had been accounted. Don't forget that there are 120,000 Likud members who are eligible to vote. So it's not an insubstantial exercise to get this sorted out. Apparently there was, when the vote polls closed yesterday, something like 70,000 people had already exercised their votes, and so this is going to be quite a big count. 20% of the votes have been counted, and the early results were showing that Knesset Speaker Yuli Edelstein had so far clinched the number one spot. So I don't think there were any huge surprises there, but it was interesting to see that Netanyahu rival Gideon Saar had already come in at number two after 20% of the votes were counted. So he seems to be doing pretty well and to be challenging for that number one spot, and that's going to be a very interesting thing. Other names in the top list include Miri Regev, Transport Minister Yisrael Katz, Public Security Minister Gilad Erdan, and newcomer to this particular list, former Jerusalem Mayor Nir Barakat. So those are the names that we're watching at the moment. Also, Yoav Gallant, the Minister of Aliyah and Integration, they are all in the top 10 at the moment. So we're going to see how that pans out when the vote is finally counted, fully counted, and we have the final results out.
What do you think Nir Barakat will land up? What kind of portfolio do you think he'll be involved with? He's an interesting guy to follow.
He's a very interesting guy to follow, and of course, having recently vacated the seat as mayor of Jerusalem, where he became very, very well known indeed. It's hard to know exactly what he is chasing after. Of course, the first time that he's running for a Knesset seat at all, and now as a member of the Likud, it's very, very difficult to know what sort of position he might be chasing after. But I can see him being involved in public relations, in foreign affairs and things like that. I don't know whether he would quite qualify as a Minister of Foreign Affairs, given the fact that this is going to be his first time out in politics. And that particular ministry is a very coveted one and sought after one, and may well be one that the Prime Minister will need to give to one of his coalition partners. But I could certainly see Nir Barakat filling a position like that, if not now, then at some point in the future.
Very interesting indeed. Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday announced that he's going to be visiting Moscow on the 21st of February for a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. What do you think makes it urgent enough that he would leave Israel and go to Russia before the elections? I thought that was an interesting thing that he's doing.
Well, it is interesting, and in fact, the Prime Minister has a number of different international visits planned between now and the time of the election. He's expected to attend the APAC conference in Washington in late March, and apparently also be meeting with President Donald Trump at that time. He's also planning to attend apparently the Munich Security Conference in the middle of February, and apparently he's going to be in India for one day later this month, as well as flying to Morocco in late March. So he's got a number of international trips lined up between now and the time of the election, and there are some people who are saying that this is really to try to emphasize his diplomatic achievements, foreign affairs achievements during the time of his period as Prime Minister, in order to somehow get that to roll over to the next period, to the elections, to try to influence the elections in that way. And of course, a meeting with Vladimir Putin later this month is one potentially of those things that he might want to underscore as being an achievement, although this strange relationship that Israel is having with Russia at the moment doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon. Don't forget that Prime Minister Netanyahu has met with Vladimir Putin no fewer than 11 times since back in 2015, and only 4 times during the course of 2018 alone. So this visit to Russia coming up in a few weeks' time comes against the backdrop again also of it being announced that the Russian anti-missile system that has been deployed in Syria is now ready and operational. So that's an interesting one, and I wonder to myself whether that might make a difference to the way in which the IDF has been dealing with matters in Syria, particularly with regard to the Russian involvement and the Russian presence there. But, you know, the relationship with Russia is an important one, not necessarily because Israel has close relations with Russia, but potentially because of the exactly the opposite reason, because Russia is continuing to operate with Israel's enemies, continuing to supply arms and support and ammunition to Iran, continuing to support the Syrian regime, continuing to do a lot of things that could potentially be very damaging to Israel. And I think that that's the reason why Netanyahu is finding it important to maintain this open dialogue with President Vladimir Putin to try somehow to convince him to behave differently, even though so far some of these requests have fallen on deaf ears, and Putin continues to do things which are really contrary to Israel's best interests in the international community. So I think that that really is why Netanyahu has found it necessary to make a further visit to Moscow. And it seems kind of counterintuitive that the Israeli government will continue to pander to the Russian government and to the Russian president when they continue to do things that seem to be completely contrary to Israel's interests. So it continues to be a very strange and yet interesting relationship between Israel and Russia.
Well, I just wonder if there are any two other international leaders who get together as much as these two blokes.
Well, we haven't even spoken about the number of times that they speak on the phone. Because between these meetings, they're speaking on the phone constantly. And, you know, there is a valid question to be asked as to what exactly is being achieved here. And it will be interesting to know whenever these secret meetings, discussions, notes, meeting notes actually are made public, exactly what is going on between these two guys and whether there is not a huge amount that we just don't have any visibility of on right now.
Absolutely fascinating. I have no doubt that there are many things that we don't have visibility about. Moving on, Jonathan Pollard has expressed his frustration that he feels the Israeli government has abandoned him. What led to him making or going public with these views?
So just a little background for those people who are not very familiar with the Pollard story. Jonathan Pollard is, of course, a former Israeli spy who was caught by the U.S. administration passing secrets to Israel, and who spent 30 years in a maximum security prison before finally recently being released on parole. And his parole conditions are very, very stringent indeed. So Pollard, having been caught and being caught spying for a friendly country, which I think is distinct from being caught spying for a not friendly country in the US. I think there is a distinction. And yet Pollard seems to have been treated with the most extreme punishment that could potentially be available to the US judicial system, the US administration. And even now that he's been released finally, he's suffering from poor health. He's unable to work because his parole conditions require him to be monitored by a GPS device, to be staying in the area of Manhattan. His computers need to be constantly monitored. And so he's effectively unemployable as a result of these parole restrictions that have been placed upon him. He and his wife apparently both suffer from poor health. And it was always hoped by him and his wife that they would be allowed to come to Israel, where, of course, the health system is entirely different from the U.S. health system, and where he hopes he would be supported by the Israeli government following the fact that he really gave up 30 years of his life sitting in the prison in order to help the state of Israel. And so he was hoping that the state of Israel would in turn somehow help him. And now he's claiming that he feels he's been completely abandoned. And this really comes on the back of these huge posters that have gone up pre-election time across Israel, showing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. President Donald Trump together in order to once again try to promote Prime Minister Netanyahu's achievements in the international community. And so these posters have gone up on the billboards. And so Pollard is saying, if they are so close with each other, the Prime Minister and the President, why is it that the Prime Minister cannot get the President to agree to allow me to leave New York, to leave the USA and come to Israel, which is really what I want to do? And so that's really what I think has triggered Pollard making the statement that he feels that he has been abandoned, and he's used quite harsh language apparently saying that the only difference between him and the two soldiers whose bodies still lie in Gaza following the recent Operation Protective Edge and the fact that their bodies were finally not given up by Hamas, the only difference between those two is that they are dead and he is alive, but effectively he feels that they've all been abandoned by the Israeli government. That's the way that Jonathan Poloth sees things right now, which is a very, very sad state of affairs. Prime Minister Netanyahu, of course, publicly has always said that every time he meets with President Trump, he always talks about Pollard, that there isn't a meeting, there isn't a conversation that happens between the two of them without him raising the Pollard issue and requesting President Trump to release Pollard to allow him to come to Israel. Who knows whether that's in fact the truth of the matter and whose position is really the correct one on this issue.
Absolutely. I want to just leave enough time. We don't have a lot left, 3.5 minutes, but I do want to talk about this Coca-Cola-Israel, the deal for to buy Clover Industries here in South Africa. We spoke about it. Very, very briefly yesterday. They put in a bid. I think it was it 4.8 billion or 3.8 billion? And for a share price of 25 rand. Tell us about this deal. Why would Coca-Cola Israel be interested in Clover here in South Africa?
So the Central Bottling Company, which is really the name under which this whole syndicate has been put together, is really the company that runs Coca-Cola Israel, the bottling plant for Coca-Cola in Israel. And indeed, for Coca-Cola around the world, for those people who are interested in Hersha, particularly around Pesach time, the only kosher Pesach Dikka Coca-Cola that you can get is the one that's bottled here in Israel, and that is distributed around the world for people who are looking to keep Pesach. So it has certainly a place around the world. And actually, Coca-Cola Israel not only is involved in running the Israeli Coca-Cola bottling plant, but indeed it does have interests around the world outside of Israel, including operating companies in Romania and in Turkey and in Uzbekistan. And in fact, this company does have an international subsidiary which has a separate persona and a separate team of management who look for opportunities outside of Israel. And it's interesting that they found the opportunity to try to bid for Clover, bearing in mind that Coca-Cola in Israel also is involved with a dairy company. It owns the Tara dairy subsidiary, and it also owns other juice bottling facilities, and it has brands, beer and soft drink brands that are non-Coca-Cola brands. So it is quite an extensive operation and quite experienced in running dairies and bottling facilities and soft drink facilities and things like that. And so it seems as if though this opportunity at Clover came up. Central Bottling Company, the company that runs Israel's Coca-Cola plant, is actually a 60% owner in a syndicate that's been put together to bid for Clover. And from what I've read, I understand that some of Clover's management might also be involved in this particular acquisition group that's been put together, which is being facilitated by Coca-Cola in Israel. And it's going to be interesting to see whether it's successful or not. I'm not quite sure how the bid has been received. I know that it's a 25% premium to the share price that closed at the end of last week at quite a substantial amount of money. I understand that it values the company at something like $350 million US dollars. And so it'll be interesting to see whether that bid will be successful and whether Coca-Cola Israel might not ultimately become the main shareholder in the ownership syndicate of Clover Industries in South Africa.
Absolutely wonderful story. Just makes me smile, that one. It's about to go 8 o'clock. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. We'll chat to Anthony tomorrow, same time, same place.